Hello, everybody, to our NEPT foundations. What are we calling these? Curriculum content and curriculum Q&A calls. It's basically here for you guys and us to just discuss some of the topics that the foundations modules are based on, where you're at. Maybe you're in a module and you want to just talk more about the clinical application of it. Maybe you want to talk about questions you have about the content in particular. Whatever it is. So we started these calls because it seemed like that was what people wanted. And then once we started them, we realized that not everybody having questions. So what these end up being is it starts out questions about content and curriculum. Once we're finished all those, if there's still time left, people have been bringing in their cases. So I have this case of this. I want you to look at this lab. I have a question about marketing or whatever. It's basically, we'll do content and curriculum type questions until finished with content and curriculum type questions, and then whatever time is left over is free for all for whatever we want to talk about. How's that sound?
Better.
So, you know, it might be that this has a mic built in, and maybe it was, maybe that was it. All right, that's better. And you guys, like I said, you caught me just finishing dinner, so I probably have nut butter around my cheeks.
With who?
Better than I traveled and came at home because I stopped at the store. I bought my green juice. I got the wraps. I had all kinds of great food and I thought, food stuff. Okay. Oh, somebody's got me on. Okay, so you. I'm going to mute everybody. So here's the deal. Questions, comments, topics you want to discuss, topics you want to go into more depth on, just open it or raise your hand. You can either raise your hand like this if your camera's on and then I'll see it, or you could raise your hand. Link can always tell you if you go down, I think, where your name is on the, you hit manage participant. No, it doesn't say manage participants. It says participants. Okay. So where it says participants and then your hand up, opens these lines. And you guys can open your own lines. If you hit that thing that says manage just participants, you see your name, you can unmute your, there you go.
Okay.
Okay.
So here's my big question. I discovered that I have an old allergy that is really, really, really bad. And I gave myself a serious physical challenge a couple of weeks ago. I am allergic to the citrus rinds, apparently. And I have apparently been so for over 30 years because I react to the bergamot oil in Earl Grey tea. And that's an old allergy. And I didn't realize that that was a citrus. I found out the hard way. I threw a kumquat into a smoothie. And then within 20 minutes, I was coughing up blood. So I had a massive reaction. So for 2.5 days, I coughed up plasma and blood. And I am doing much better now. I Benadryl'd the heck out of myself, and I had just like about that much of the smoothie, and then quit because I started to feel the reaction. So
that's,
I could have
really good that your body was that strong.
Yes, yes. So I got it.
So you go in the emergency room with you.
Yeah. Yes. So my question is, I figured it out. I took a Benadryl that kind of capped the severity. And I just stayed on Benadryl for the next 4 days while that sort of settled down. My question is, what else could I have done to mitigate the response having already poisoned myself? I would like to have not have coughed up blood for 2 days. So how do you understand that?
Done instead of the Benadryl, you mean? Or what could you have done in addition to
what
reaction several days, even though you took the Benadryl?
Yeah, so I'm in the process of retrying food. I'm starting to introduce stuff back in that I've been off of for 10 months. So given that I'm reactive to so many things and that I have these dramatic reactions, I'm afraid that I'm going to have yet another circumstance where I poison myself.
Right. So I would be afraid to add anything back at this point.
Yeah,
so a couple of things that come to mind is to fortify yourself going into it. So antihistamine type thing. So vitamin C is quercetin is amazing antihistamine. There's there's a product called RC from Vital Nutrients that's kind of combines it all. And it's been super, super effective. We have cedar trees in Texas, and a lot of people are severely allergic to the point where they're taking medications for 3 months. And I've helped people with building up in advance. They're going to have the exposure. They can't help it unless they move out of Texas, but they're going to have the exposure. So we've built them up in advance. I've done reishi mushroom. So okay. They can get tinctures or things with reishi mushroom. Really awesome for that. Allergy, do bowel tolerance. I would figure out your bowel tolerance of vitamin C and be taking it every single day without fail. Now, if you start to go down, you know, you may need to go down in it, but the podcast is going on for a long time that you calculate your vitamin C bowel tolerance and say like it's 10 grams and you start taking the 10 grams within a few weeks, you may actually need more. But that's all your body was able to do. And it's like, oh, we have all these other things we could do. So I'd recommend that you do the vitamin every couple of weeks until it stabilizes or starts to come down. If it keeps increasing, we keep doing it. If it starts to go down, then that's easy because it's easy to tell if you're overtaking it. You just start to poop more, right? But if you can't tell if you're not taking enough unless you do the time. So I would do a vitamin C flush every couple of weeks. I would fortify with either if you're doing the flush, you can fortify with the Aller C, or you could do the separate vitamin C and quercetin if you want to. Either way, I've just had really good results with that particular product. It's membrane type stuff. I mean, it's your lungs that are coughing up blood. So I would be doing anything that I could to strengthen mucous membranes. Right. So slippery elm is really good. And it's really kind of weird about slippery elm because you think about slippery elm tea for a sore throat. It makes total sense that it works, right? You do it for your gut, it goes through, it makes sense. But it works so well for respiratory stuff. Like, wait a minute, you're not pouring it down your respiratory tract, right? Why does it work for the respiratory tract? And people start talking about being like the body is perceiving that particular substance. You know, it's like the energy, almost the energetics of that substance it's a mucolytic, it's actually a mucus, not a mucolytic, but it's a mucus form. It perceives that energetically. So starting maybe even slippery elm, just 2-3 times a day, just take a cup of slippery elm tea. It's amazingly soothing for anything digestive. I had a really weird situation happen. I had eaten really late holiday thing that goes wrong with me. I don't eat the wrong foods. I just eat really late and I overate. I was laying in bed and for some reason I started getting like this tickle in my throat, and I was laying down and I felt like a regurgitation, like acid was coming up from my stomach. I don't remember ever feeling that. It was, at least I haven't felt it in 30 years. Like, wow, the thing was how intense that feeling was in my throat. It was like super, and here, right here in the esophagus. I was like, holy cow, that's so weird. So the morning, I got up and I went to the kitchen and I boiled some water and put some slippery elm in a cup and I drank it down. It went away, like almost immediately. That's just like a miracle. It's like a miracle. I do that. I would be looking at slippery elm and I wouldn't just do the next because, you know, Third Coat Tea has like, you know, minuscule amounts of slippery elm. I just get this slippery elm powder. Don't get the husks, get the powder, and then just start doing that. So all of those things, and I would give yourself a good taste before you start to test again.
Okay, cool. And then if I'm having a reaction, should I go toss it up? Should I go throw up and get it out of my system? Or is there some other way to help contain it, what is already in my digestive tract?
Well, here's the thing. You only drank that much, right? You said,
yeah, about a kumquat.
Yeah. So that it's not the physical, it's that you triggered a huge mast cell reaction. Yes. So other things to calm down a mast cell reaction are omega 3s.
Okay.
And then anything that does COX-2 inhibition. So look up all the nutrients. There are things that inhibit COX-2. That could be an idea too. But really make sure your fatty acids are up to speed. Really look at the chart we have in the fat muscle and look at the 6-to-3 ratio and be like meticulous about your 6-to-3 ratio for a month.
Because okay. I know I've had a hard time getting that ratio in the zone. I'm on a paleo diet. I am all grass fed. So I'm doing all the right things on that. And even at that, I'm probably still only half where I need to be on the omega-3s. So, and I'm supplementing.
Because even if you're grass-fed, there's still a lot of arachidonic acid. Nowhere near as much as grain-fed, but you're still going to have arachidonic acid in there. So you're still getting that very potent omega-3.
Right. And I'm on a Monopure supplement and a couple of other things to try and pump that up, and I'm still not getting there. So I know I've still got work to do in that territory.
Yeah. The other thing is that do a blood spot fatty acid test.
Okay.
See where those ratios are so you exactly know. Because sometimes you're further off than you think you'll bring them quickly. I had somebody with a 22-to-1 ratio. And it wasn't even that much fish oil. It was maybe 3 grams of fish oil that she did, maybe 2 or 3 grams. It wasn't a large dose. But over the course of 3 months, when we went back and tested, she went from a 22 to a 2.
Okay. All right. So I can up that's fish oil. I'm taking that some, but I can definitely up that because the numbers have not shifted up enough. And I've been on.
How much are you taking? Sometimes takes 3 to 6 grams, depending on how far out of.
Yeah, I am taking. Two and a half grams. No, probably 1.8 grams, I think, is what I normally take.
At least double it.
Okay.
At least double it. You know, for this period, if you're going to be testing to really get your body up to speed.
Sure. Okay.
So when you have a reaction, you took the Benadryl, you can take, I would do the Slippery Elm. I would do the quercetin because the Benadryl is, it's just like, you know,
right.
Fortifying your body's ability to handle the mast cell reaction.
Right.
So I would do the vitamin C, could get yourself up to bowel tolerance. But if you have that reaction, betcha your bowel tolerance then just shot right up.
Okay. You
need more. I've had people call me. This is the funniest story. She calls me up. It was like, I don't know, 10 in the morning. She goes, help, I have a date at noon. I'm like, what do I have to do with your date? Like, really? Oh, I have a date at noon and I just had such and such and I'm in hives and I broke out. What should I do?
Right.
Oh God, what am I going to tell her? So I said to her, okay, let's see, what can we do? I had her put flax oil, castor oil on the area. I had her take a whole bunch of flax oil and vitamin C and quercetin. And she calls me up. She goes, it was gone by noon.
Wow.
So it was shocking how quickly it went away.
I'd have been happy if that had been gone by noon.
Say it again.
I would have been happy if coughing up blood had been gone by noon. That would have made me very happy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. So I've got a plan.
The omega-6 chart, it's in the fatty acids module. And yep. The blood spot fatty acid is talked about in there briefly. And then we have a whole module on fatty acid testing.
Okay. Yeah. That will get me started.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, because I had an anxiety attack afterwards thinking, holy crap, how am I ever going to retest everything if I get this kind of reaction every time I try something? So.
Yeah. And when you test things, try starting with something that you kind of suspect but don't suspect it's huge.
Yeah,
you don't suspect at all.
This one caught me off guard. I didn't realize that bergamot was a citrus. I knew bergamot oil was a problem, but I never connected that it was a citrus. So this one
are
was.
Are you able to eat citrus? Are you able to eat?
I can eat have like lemon rind and the juice. What I can't have is the rind. Because I had the couple of days before the kumquat, I had lemon juice. I was testing lemon juice and didn't get any reaction at all. So, but it was just the juice. There was no rind. And I suspect.
Yeah.
That the rind's the deal. That I'm gonna have to peel citrus before and then wash it before I juice it because I don't tolerate the oil.
Yeah. Wow. Right. We'll keep it the whole month of really shoring yourself up before you try again.
It sounds like a fabulous plan. I am all over not having that reaction again.
Anybody have anything to add? Anybody else have any thoughts or?
I got tons of notes. I'm scrolling up in the bar here.
I have a question. This is Eva. Dr. Rita Marie, do you think that activated charcoal would help at all?
You know, normally I would say, like, if there was a poison or quantity, but I don't know. I mean, it's worth a try, but given it was, like, not this huge mass of food, it was this little tiny bit.
Yeah.
I have a feeling it just stimulated this histamine reaction and got it out of you. You pooped it out, like, within probably 4 hours. But you still had the reaction after that, which is why I'm thinking that that it wouldn't have. But it could. I mean, it's always worth a try. It's easy.
Okay. What about like a digestive enzymes? I know if I accidentally get gluten, one of the things I do is hit the digestive enzymes for a couple of days.
Yeah, digestive enzymes could be helpful, but it's an oil. You see, it's
That's why I'm asking.
I believe that this is like an IgG reaction, which is what most food allergies are. It was an IgE in reaction. So I don't know if the enzymes would actually break it. Because with the enzymes, we're actually going to be breaking down these proteins so that they don't aggravate and get in the system anymore.
Right.
And that's why they work. But this isn't a protein reaction.
Okay. Okay, cool.
In the oil.
And what about the DAO enzyme? Which
DAO,
is
that could work, yeah. You know, my problem with the DAO is I haven't found any good DAOs. They all have talc in them and all kinds of fillers and additives. And I started looking, and I was like, oh, let me go to Seeking Health because I trust them, and they usually have these great things without fillers. And I looked at it, and it looked like the exact same formula. And then I found another one. Like, I found four different companies, and they looked exactly the same. So I talked to Ben Lynch, and he goes, oh, yeah. There's only one place we can get it, and there's no other way to get it. Anyway.
Oh, okay. I got it.
But he, like, even though it wasn't that for certain people, it was worth him carrying, even though it wasn't, like, up to his standards, just because it could be so effective.
Okay. So on the slippery elm, we use that in our horses for treating ulcers, but we always combine it with aloe. And it seems to be the combination of aloe and a slippery elm, which does the intestinal tract recovery. And I'm wondering if that would have any application with this.
Again, I think aloe is application. I mean, it certainly could, but I haven't seen anything talk aloe and respiratory. Everything's aloe and digestive. So
okay.
Certainly, you know, all of those things are worth a try.
I hope not to have occasion to try them all. I'd like to never have to experiment with how this gets fixed again. That would be fine.
That was a weird reaction, to have that severe reaction from so little.
Yeah.
And for it to actually cause bleeding.
Yes.
Right? Because that's more, you think of an erosive process.
Yeah.
That's why I was thinking the vitamin A, because the vitamin A will help with that. Right. Mucus lining,
Mucus lining is B1.
Mm, yep.
It really accelerates the healing and reproduction of cells. So those two are good ones. Yeah. So, you know, aloe is certainly worth a try. You know, when you're in desperate sticks, you throw whatever you have at it. You guys could see me whenever if I have a reaction or I say, oh my God, I feel like I'm getting a cold. The amount of stuff I throw in my body at one time, but it stops it from happening.
Right.
Yeah.
Experiment and say, well, this time I'm only going to do these to see if ones are the ones that are effective. I don't really care at that point. I just want it to go away.
Right.
That's why I was throwing all that out there. I'd actually just been working with somebody who was having not quite that bad, but some pretty severe histamine reactions. And And a lot of that came back to, we realized afterwards she's got the MTRR with a double homozygous variation. So her histamine and her B12 and all of that was severely compromised. We did the quercetin, and actually the maitake mushrooms were really helpful. The form of vitamin A that she took, it's a type of sea vegetable called Dunalilia. And so not only did you get the vitamin A, but you got the mucilaginous quality from the seaweed.
Well, that's a good idea. I'm not, you introduced me to that because I hadn't heard of Dunalilia, is how you say it. You can put it in the chat. Now, really, I've been looking at for people who have, say, the BCMA1 SNP, which is the conversion from beta carotene to vitamin A, and I have two heterozygouses on that, and I know people, I saw somebody recently who had three homozygouses on that. You need to take vitamin A, a lot of it. Whereas I take vitamin A maybe a couple times a week, I may take it.
Which SNP is that interferes with vitamin A?
BCM01.
Okay,
I'll go look. On it, you know, and if somebody has just one heterozygous, I mean, with the way that, if you get them eating the way we want them to be eating with lots of beta carotene containing foods, they'll push that pathway. When I realized I had that, when I first started eating this way and I started drinking juices and lots more greens and all, my skin is a completely different color than it was when I was in my 20s. I used to be really pale and pasty in the winter, and I'd get really tan in the summer. Now I just look kind of orangey tan all year round. And when I first started doing this, my hands got really orange. If I started drinking carrot juice, I got real orange. And, you know, that, yeah, people say that. But really, the reason is that it wasn't converting, which is actually okay as long as you get the amount of it. Have a lot more beta carotene that just stays as beta carotene is fine because it's an amazing antioxidant, right? But I realized that's why I don't get pale in the winter anymore because of the beta carotene, and I realized that I'm not converting it. And actually, I'm looking now, maybe my hands look a little pale. Oh, look at the cutie pie. Hi. Hey, very cute.
Well, okay, so I will go take a look at those SNPs. Yeah. I know I've got some MTRR challenges. My MTHFR is not too bad, but my MTRR is a little on the wobbly side, and and my liver detox is not great, and my histamine handling is not great. There's some challenges there. So,
It's really the quercetin that you need.
Okay. Well, and then the methionine and glutathione for the liver.
Yeah. It depends on what the I just took my boot off and my shoe got cold. I'm going to put it back on. Depends with the glutathione. You do have to be careful. So we think about glutathione as being really soothing, and some people can have a bad reaction because if they've got some blockages, if you really look at those sulfur, if you look at Ben Lynch's charts and you go the downstream, the sulfation, if someone has a problem with one of those and it's sluggish converting with the glutathione, it gets backed up, right? You get extra sulfur, which could be okay, but if they're sluggish going downstream through sulfates, you get stuck with this over sulfur reaction. And so people that have, and they eat dried fruit and they have a bad reaction. Some people can eat dried fruit with sulfates just fine, sulfites, and then the others can't. So that can have to do with the SNPs. So just be a little bit cautious. And also everything is perfect amount. And so there's negative feedback loops in the body. So if you give the body too much, then it just shuts off certain pathways. So right. Just be careful with that. I've looked at that pathway, and, you know, somebody who was having bad reactions to glutathione, I'm like, why is Okay. So really, you always have to think about the negative feedback loop. Same thing with like really low in DHEA. I'm really not a big fan of giving people high dose DHEA because it turns it's negative feedback loop. It says, oh, plenty of it. We don't need to make it, right? So you never get mode of doing it. So you always just, if your body can make this much and you need this much, you replace this much, right? And then as the body gets that, and then you work on why can't it make enough? So you increase the substrate to allow it to make more. But if you increase the substrate to allow it to make more, but you're giving it way up here, level is turning off the production. So it won't use that substrate to make more. Then, depending on what the substrate is for the particular thing you're working on, then you get a buildup of something that may be problematic in other ways. So whether we're mucking with the hormones, whether it's with natural bioidentical hormones, we still, it's not the matter of more is better. It's always the matter of finding that perfect sweet spot, that perfect amount that they need without turning it off. Same thing with stomach acid. It's very widespread and popular in the realm to, oh, somebody's slow in stomach acid, let's just give them HC. And a lot of them don't do it without even doing a test. They don't do a stress test. They don't do anything. I mean, testing to see how much HCL you're making is a very, very expensive test to do, the Heidelberg test. And in this country, even have that equipment. So you do it functionally and you do it with, say, an HCL challenge. But a lot of docs are not, they're not doing the HCL challenge. They're just going, hey, just take this much HCL. They're not talking to people about how HCL. Is it not making HCL because it doesn't have some of the substrates? Does it not have enough zinc? Does it not have enough magnesium? Does it not have enough, I can't remember the third. There's a zinc, magnesium, and there's one other. Well, zinc and magnesium are big. But there's a third one, and I don't remember which one it is off the top.
B6? Is it B6?
Making stomach acid? I don't remember. I don't think it's B6. I think it's another mineral. But anyway, the major ones are zinc.
Yeah. So I just pulled up my little report.
Like slipped. Something just goes out. We can't get it back. It'll come back like middle of the night.
Yeah, it's going to wake you up. It'll be like, hello, get up.
Hello, there you go. Write this down. But anyway, if you don't have the substrates to make it, then you're not going to make it, right? And so what I like to do is, if I'm going to supplement somebody with HCL, I want to make sure I'm giving them bitters to help stimulate the parietal cells to actually do it. And I'm getting to give it the cultures and the substrates it needs.
Right. I find that actually bitters actually works really well for me, that if I gargle and then eat something green, which is sharp tasting, endive or something like that, which has got that sharp edge to it, that really does a pretty nice job of getting the system awake and working.
Great idea, right? Because gargling stimulates the vagus nerve, and the greens, the bitters stimulates the parietal cells to do more. And it does more than just stimulate the parietal cells to produce more acid. It actually stimulates lubrication throughout the digestive tract.
Right. Right.
So cholagogue, a gentle, mild cholagogue, not Ellendine or something like that, but it's a cholagogue, which means it moves bile. So it helps everything in the system. Yeah.
Right.
So I have a...
Oh, yeah, because we were talking about...
And that's also why celery juice is effective, because it's a bitter.
Yep. It's also got a lot of the minerals that the body needs to make it. So celery juice is a great one.
So I had a question when you were talking about the glutamine. And I know we had talked about it a little bit with the glutamic acid from bone broth. No, when we were talking here where you were talking about with the liver with – the methionine and the glutamine.
Glutathione.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Sorry. I was watching my grandkids and it's like, not clicking for a second there. Anyway, we were also talking about the glutamic acid that people, that can happen when you do those slow cooked bone broths, and mm-hmm. how that can also be detrimental and create those inflammations. Would that be something too to watch out for when somebody's having, this kind of a reaction, especially if you have autoimmunity?
Well, think about glutamic acid being excitatory neurotransmitter. And so that will up the neurotransmissions to areas. It caused certain hyperactivity and people being like overly stimulated, a little bit anxious, definitely anxious, mm-hmm. yeah, anxiety, mm-hmm. sympathetic dominance.
Mm-hmm. That'd be me.
Which affects the whole, right. So you need to, you know, gargle a lot to get down. But that's another SNP to look at too, is that GAD SNP, glutamic acid carboxylate.
I actually have some GAD challenges, and I was just looking in my report here and my DAO, I've got two homozygous bad pairs out of three. So that's the histamine management.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah. Now, you know, Eva said the DAO, use it a lot, like I said, just because I'm such a purist and I don't like things that have crap in them. But it might be something to keep on hand in case you have a reaction, right? I wouldn't do it as part of the protocol for rebuilding yourself. That's where I would do the nutrients, the C and the quercetin and all the other, the fatty acids and all that. I want to keep that on hand for an emergency response.
Okay. Probably better off with the talc than not having DAO.
Yeah, exactly. And look around, I think, you know, just do, before you buy one, just do an exhaustive search for all the people.
If
you find a good one, let us know.
Yeah. It's going to be a priority search now.
There you go. Because I've done the search before, you know, but it was probably been a year or so since I've done it. And it was like, okay, there's all four of these and they're exactly the same. Okay. There's one manufacturer.
Okay, so let me ask about the GAD then, because I'm looking at the GADs here, and two-thirds of them are heterozygous bad. I don't have any homozygous ones, but I've only got a third of them that are in the green. So,
you have a tendency towards sympathetic dominance. You have a tendency towards anxiety, towards, mm-hmm. you know, and I'll just tell you the truth of the matter is I have more of them than you do. I have several homozygous. I have a whole slew of heterozygous, and I think I have one or two that are green, that are normal. Right. And so I know that that's what got me in trouble when I was in my 20s, real early on, just being that, you know, that go-go hyper person and not being able to calm myself down. And so heart math has helped me just really turn that off. You know, and I can do that. Now I'm doing the Muse and I'm meditating, and, you know, I'm getting better and better at it. And I'm 26 days or something now in a row. You know, of meditating, and that's really cool because I've never done that in my life as long as I've been here, you know. So really looking at things that are calming, that are helpful. I'm not a big fan of just jumping right in and using GABA, unless you get somebody who's in the state of anxiety and, you know, they're in the state where they're about to go really addictive drugs, which is what people on with GABA imbalances, and then you can work with that. But I, you know, you might look at it. You can look at. I probably couldn't hurt to do like a liposomal GABA to see how that does. That may calm everything down.
Okay. Does it?
And the other thing, GAD, it's related to blood sugar. So that's one of the things we look at when we're testing somebody to see if they have a latent autoimmune diabetes of adulthood, LADA. Is GAD because pancreas will produce it.
Too. Okay.
Blood sugar balance and the GAD as well.
Yeah, I have a history of hyperreactive blood sugar. That's much improved from what it was when I was in my 20s and 30s. But I can still. But I'm real careful about managing it now. And if I'm not precise about managing that, then it's sort of all over. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. All right. This is a lot of good and useful information.
Good. Yay.
I have strategies now.
I hope you don't have that reaction again. I hope you don't.
I hope never to need them, but just in case, I've got strategies.
Good. Keep us posted. Who else? Questions? Comments? Petitions?
I have a question.
Sure. Who's that? Oh, Val. Okay.
And this is a question that's been on my mind for some time, and it's sort of related to the talk we've already had, and that is how I don't quite understand histamines in food versus the histamines that we produce with allergic reactions. What's the relationship there?
They are the same chemical, and some foods contain higher levels of them. And in about, what, two, 3 weeks? Is that when we're doing the histamine talk? We have a whole lecture in the food religions. So rather than go through some of that and have all my ducks in a row and slides in front of me and maybe give some less than complete information, how about if you wait till then?
That sounds great. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do a whole talk on them. Yeah, because you see, there's chemicals in foods that can react poorly to people. And, you know, my opinion, this is just opinion, but it's good, you know, good for something, is that when people react poorly to chemicals, constituents that are natural in foods, and others don't, it's to me that there's a mechanism at play there, whether it's a genetic enzyme insufficiency due to a SNP, or whether it's leaky gut, which is a really common one, because a lot of times these things get into the bloodstream because they should be filtered by the gut. So it's something breakdown. So whenever you hear somebody say, I have a oxalate sensitivity or I have a histamine sensitivity, I always want to go back to why. I don't want to just treat it like, okay, let's avoid oxalate foods. Let's avoid histamine foods. Because quite frankly, guys, that's a Band-Aid. That's really just a Band-Aid. And yeah, they have to do that. They have to avoid it, but they have to avoid it while you're going, okay, is there something, not necessarily that there is, but is there something underlying this that we could correct, an imbalance that we could correct so they're not so sensitive? So I was working with somebody who's so oxalate sensitive that she could not even have one little leaf of spinach and she would go bonkers. She'd have a little tiny bit pit of turmeric or something that has oxalate and she would go bonkers. And so she was reacting to everything, and it was all kinds of problems, not just, not just gut stuff, but she was having neurologic symptoms. And so we figured out it was oxalates, and she started staying away from it, but we didn't stop there. We started working on her, and she sent me a message. It was probably, I was looking through my text, and I see it and remember it. It was probably about six months ago, a year ago, I don't know. She wrote, you'll never believe what I ate today. I had a little, like, 2 spoonfuls of spinach, and I didn't react, right? So it's really cool when that can happen. People to that. Maybe they can't have the hyperabundance of those things that somebody without that genetic tendency or that breakdown could have, but you want to help them to repair. That's what it's all about with root cause.
So just to add one more question to this picture, I went and looked at the oxalate foods and I went and looked at the high histamine foods just because I figure if I'm having histamine challenges, maybe I shouldn't be, you know, munching on all the stuff which is high histamine. And if I look at the list of things I cannot eat because I have allergic or gastric reactions to them, I take all of those out. Everything that's left is high histamine. Everything that's left is on the high histamine list.
Oh, everything that's left. So have you considered water fasting?
I just give up eating altogether.
I'm not joking.
No, I have thought about it. I was actually going to do a fast, right? I was actually setting up to do a fast when I had this massive reaction.
That's so, with the kumquat.
Yes. So
it will become to be known as.
I'm open to the idea because it's clear to me that I have a histamine problem and everything I eat is on the high histamine list because everything that I cannot eat, I have worse reactions too.
So here's the thing, and I don't, I've done tests myself. I'm really a big proponent of them in the people who it's right for. There's some people who it's not right for, and I know is probably one that it's not right for, because whenever she's tried it, she can't make it very long. But you are probably okay with it because you have reacted so well to a ketogenic type approach.
Right.
And that's a pure ketogenic diet, the best and the easiest to do ketogenic diet butter.
Okay.
Best ketogenic diet on the planet. Okay. And some people go into ketosis more easily than others. And some people have an easy transition into ketosis. And for some people, it's hell.
All right. I will go read up on it.
Well, so read up on it. I did a 28-day water fast. Okay. So I spent 2 years trying to figure out what was wrong with me, dealing with this food reaction and that food reaction and eliminating this and then having a reaction to that. And I was going nutty. I was driving myself insane. And somebody suggested water fasting, and I did the 5-day water fast thing like they do in the allergy relief books. You say 5 days and then you reintroduce things. And it was never okay because I didn't know how to reintroduce things, and it was too soon. I didn't have enough time to really actually repair the leaky, get the candida out of my system completely or whatever. So I did a 28-day water fast, and I went from 115 pounds, which was probably just about right for me, to 92. And people were scared for me. They were scared that I was going to die. They were scared that emaciated. And it was the best thing I ever did. Because I went from there, the weight comes back on. Your body has a set point. It's going to come back. But why not? I always thought about it as like, if you have a house that's not built on good foundation and it's got, you know, rotting out boards, you're not going to try to fix it and, you know, put every other board, new one, or you just, they break them down and they start all over again. And that's the way with the body, because there's so much toxic residue stored in fatty tissue, right? And it hurts sometimes when you release it, especially if sluggish detox reactions. But when you do it over that time, for some people, it's miraculous. And it was miraculous for me.
All right, I'm gonna go look into this. Yeah, so you basically, it is water and then water and then more water, and that's all it is water for 28 solid days.
The things I would have done differently that I didn't do, I would have done enemas.
Okay.
I didn't have a bowel movement for 27 days. Yeah. And so if you're doing all this, right, and I would add saunas and other things to be getting the talks out, I would have probably had a better response.
Okay.
I was only 28 at the time. You know, I was young. So well, 20.
I'm not going to starve to death in 28 days. That's for sure. I still have 50 pounds to lose. So.
No, you're not going to starve to death. I didn't. I was 15 pounds. I think that's a whole bunch of hooey. And so when we hear people get on these programs and they say, oh, but I don't want to lose weight. Like, I'm afraid to follow your plan because I might lose weight. And oh, how much do you weigh? I weigh 125 pounds. Ooh, so I need to lose. Well, but I'm fine. Yeah, so what, right? Okay if you go below. Now, if somebody's 95 pounds at 5'4", that's not a person I'm going to recommend a water fast to.
Right.
But as long as they've got the extra, I had stuff to grab, 115 pounds, and I lost it all. But I lost all that fat, and I was able to build back healthy tissue. And I've never looked back. I mean, all those problems that I went into the fast with went away. They've been gone for 3 years.
All right. Gonna go look at it.
Struggling this 2 years.
Yeah, with these problems, I mean, this is the histamine reactions obviously go back 25 years or more.
Yep.
So, and that's been a chronic problem in different territories for forever. I mean, I get stung by a bee on my legs. I get welts like this. So, it's clearly an ongoing issue, and I might not be a bad idea to just see what we can do about that. All right, I'm gonna go learn.
You may not see, just, you know, learn about it, read about it. The book that turned me around, it's a little extreme, but I got a lot out of it because of where I was at, was fasting can save your life.
Okay.
Joel Fuhrman has a book, Fast to Live, or Eat. He has a book on fasting. Joel Fuhrman does. But there, you know, it's the basic concepts of what's physiologically happening. Oh, there's an, I'll find you the link. I wrote it down. I think I downloaded it to my Kindle. I heard somebody speak that Mike Mutzel interviewed on his recent shows, and he was talking about ketogenesis, but this guy with a book on fasting.
Okay.
His idea of fasting was a little different than this. His wasn't long-term fasting, but he did, I haven't read the book yet to see what he had to say, but he actually was documenting the mechanism at play and why it was so therapeutic.
Okay.
Minimally, I would start with intermittent fasting of 2 days a week, not two consecutive, but at least a day or two apart of 23-hour fast.
Okay. I mean, I've been doing, most days I do 12 hours. So I've been on a pretty steady diet of 12 hours, and I try every other week, I've tried to get 2 days back to back where I go straight through one day into the next to my, so it's, you know, 36 hours. So every couple of weeks I do a 36 hour intermittent fast, but.
A week, 3 hours, right? It means you don't ever have to have a day without food. You decide whether it's dinner, lunch, breakfast, lunch, or dinner, that's the one meal you're going to have.
Right.
And from that's your meal, and then you don't eat again until that meal the next day. And
right.
Twice a week.
Okay.
Growth hormone goes up, goes down, leptin resistance heals. So many things happen.
Okay. Okay. That's, right. That's
a good starting point for the fasting. And then you can maybe go to a 3 day, a 5 day. 3 days the worst because you don't ever start to feel good because you feel crap for 3 days. Anytime I've said I'm going to do a 3 day fast, I get to the third day and I go, why would I want to start eating again? I'm going to feel good again. I'm going to start feeling good tomorrow. Why? You know, and then I'll go 10 days or something.
Okay.
10 days.
Yeah, I don't, and I don't struggle with the intermittent fasting. I don't struggle with it at all. And when I do 36 hours, I'm not particularly struggling with it. It's not on my mind, you know. I notice it, but it's not awful. So I think I do okay with the process. I think that my body's adapting to that mechanism better than it was certainly 10 months ago.
Yeah. So do that and just get yourself used to it, and then if you do decide to do an extended fast, you're gonna have to schedule it. You're gonna have to lighten your load away. I didn't even stay home. I just went away, did it at a fasting retreat.
Okay.
And it was a low overhead retreat, right? They take a bunch of people and they charge them a bunch of money.
And they don't feed them. That's awesome. Okay.
I'm gonna go to Laura. She has her hand up. Laura, can you unmute yourself?
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie.
Hey, Laura.
Hey, I wanted to ask a question. Post-op, so my hip is doing awesome, like awesome. Like PT
I'm
is
so
going well. I have minimal, it's not even pain. It's just a little bit of soreness in the mornings. It's like so much better. But interestingly,
surgery, right? That's what you said.
It's so much better. Oh my gosh. It's so much better. Since it was before the surgery, like incredible. And I'm really excited because I can go to full weight bearing in another week. So I'm excited to see how that feels and get off the crutches. But the interesting thing that I've noticed, two challenges, and I almost feel bad like complaining about them because my hip is so much better. But I'm having some trouble with sleep, and I think it's detoxing off of the anesthesia and stuff. And we're looking at doing the second hip, in less than a month on the 16th of February.
So
and
you looped out. What's the problem with the anesthesia?
I think I'm having trouble sleeping, and I think it's related to detoxing off the anesthesia or something. Cause my normal tricks of the trade are not working, like the herbs and like upping my magnesium and some things. And the other interesting thing is I was having problems pre-op. Didn't matter what I was eating. I was having like stomach pain and abdominal pain afterwards. And that got better when I did a combination of colloidal silver and aloe vera juice, twice a day, like before breakfast and, before dinner. And I don't take any medications, anything like that. And post-op, they had me on naproxen for the inflammation and aspirin as a blood thinner. And I think that's doing some things to my gut. Like my body's not liking that so much. So I emailed my surgeon and I said, hey, you know, my pain, I don't really have pain. I wouldn't even call that pain. Can I come off of this stuff? And he said, you can come off the aspirin now, but he really wanted me to stay on the naproxen. I think because of the amount of inflammation that was present during the surgery.
He's afraid of tissue formation. Is that why?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you bump up your natural anti-inflammatories? Did you bump up your fatty acids and your things like ginger, turmeric, boswellia? I mean, there's a bunch of stuff you can do that you don't need.
Yeah, I'm taking a lot of that stuff. The boswellia, the ginger, the curcumin. Yeah, I'm adding in a lot of that. And
I know this isn't what you're asking, but I'm going to just give you some unsolicited advice. When I would would be to look up the mechanism of naproxen.
Okay.
What pathways it's affecting. And then look up the mechanisms of some of the other stuff. He probably doesn't know anything about the nutritional approaches. So if you could say, look, I know you're concerned about the inflammation. Here's what naproxen does. Here's what these things do. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, this is what I want to do instead because it doesn't have the side effects of the naproxen. It's not going to irritate my gut lining. Long haul, it's going to be overwhelmingly better. And it just may be that he doesn't know. And I know you're deferring to him because he is knowing in terms of the surgeries, but he's not trained like you are in the nutritional approaches. And this might be an opportunity for you to actually make a difference in other people's lives as well. Because if he gets educated, because you show him like, this is the mechanism, it works the mechanism so much better because this is actually, you know, because naproxen's it's an NSAID, right? Or is it a COX-2 inhibitor? Mm-hmm. It's an NSAID. Okay, so you're looking at, you're killing my firefighters, buddy. I don't want to kill my firefighters. I want to strengthen them, right? And you show them those pathways, even just the simple pathway from our book, our fatty acid module. With the firefighters and their diet, you know, because, and you'll look, I'm going to give myself some extra EPA. I'm going to fortify these. So I don't really need the naproxen to shut down because what's happening, and I'm going to be relying on the naproxen, which shortchanging me from actually doing this on my own, right? Because remember, it interferes with the pathways. And as soon as you stop taking the naproxen, then you don't.
Yeah.
The problem comes because you haven't fortified your own ability to handle it. So I think he sounds like a really reasonable guy and he just doesn't know. That's the only tool he has in his toolbox.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I will look that up. And he's one that's very open that if I, you know, ask him questions or it was interesting. I sent him some literature on the, on laser therapy and he was very open-minded and I think he's a really open-minded guy. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's something new. He wasn't trained. They didn't teach him fatty acid paths and how they affect inflammation. There's no course in medical school that teaches that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do you think, like, I know I'm going to need some gut healing stuff after this is all over. I mean, I'm just feeling
Now, you know, if you're taking naproxen, it's affecting your gut lining. It's thinning your gut lining. Can you do some slippery elm and DGL and things like that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been making sure to kind of up my probiotics and doing stuff. It's interesting because I feel
vitamin A and B1 as well for protecting that mucous membrane, the vitamin A, but the B1 actually helps those cells to reproduce. We use it in leaky gut healing protocols. If you look up the mechanism of why it works, that's really what you would need.
Yeah.
To negate the effect of that.
Because I was just kind of thinking of ways to, you know, I got a couple weeks before the next one. I think I'm just going to feel better after the second surgery is done and I can just work on just healing everything.
And you can just heal everything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you can get some little things done so that you don't want to go, if you're here, you don't want your gut to go down here. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
The little, as little that you can appear. So let's, the sleeping. Can it be related to the gut, the effects on the gut, right? Because of the GABA being produced in the gut. Which is the organism that produces GABA? Is it Helvetica? Or is it, there's one of the lactobacillus that produce, it's, look that up to see. And you can actually help supplement that and see if that makes a difference. But it could be related to some of the neurotransmitter effects of the gut.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, and I need my sleep.
Are you having trouble falling asleep or staying asleep?
Falling asleep. Yeah, because I'll like try to go to bed at 10 and then I'm up at 11 and midnight and 2 and 3. And I this is like, I have such respect for new moms because, oh my gosh, like just the challenges with sleeping. And I told my mom, I was like, I understand why sleep deprivation is a form of torture. It's like, this is
I remember
rough.
That every 2 hours. You're just starting to get down and you're just, and then,
Like total respect. Cause I mean, I told Mark, I was like, we don't even have a baby that we're taking care of. I'm just having trouble sleeping here. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So what else, you know, I mean, you can certainly look at GABA, serotonin, 5-HTP, you know, some of those things you're trying things, but that may not be strong enough if it's really is a neurotransmitter imbalance as a result of the gut being out of balance. It's certainly worth the, it's worth a try.
Yeah.
Liposomal GABA, liposomal GABA would be good. 5-HTP, you know, B6, those kind of things. Melatonin, but you had a deficiency of melatonin, so hopefully you're still taking that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, but maybe I need to increase it a little bit. Yeah.
There's an article with that I think it was the article that Lynn, you posted on Facebook too. Today in response to somebody's question on melatonin, or maybe it was another one I found, but it talked about all the things that we're thinking of melatonin for this, but looking at these other things that melatonin is good for. So maybe how much melatonin are you taking? Like 3, 5?
3.
I double it.
Okay.
I double it. See how you do. I've seen people recommend as much as 15. And I haven't looked at the site. You can get it's like 15. That's, you know, there's a lot of downsides that possible, but if you slowly build up to it and see how you feel, it might be a good thing.
Yeah. And I can tell, I think, in another week and a half, I can submerge. I love my Epsom salt detox baths and I'm like missing those a little bit. So it's, but thank you. I will. I'll up the melatonin and look at 5-HTP and a couple things. Oh, thanks, Lynn. She's so good.
You're not allowed to bathe, right? But you can do foot soaks. Why don't you
yeah, that's a good idea. I haven't done a foot soak.
And then do foot soaks for the Epsom salts. That could help a lot.
There's yeah.
Apple cider vinegar in there too.
Get okay, that's a good idea.
Don't get the real expensive.
Okay.
But yeah, that could be really helpful as well.
Thank you.
May I add something, Dr. Rita Marie?
Sure.
I know that when my daughter, and she has a lot of issues, so she broke her wrist at PE last year, and she had to have a surgery, so we had to put pins and plates in her wrist. And her specialist put her on glutathione suppository to get the anesthesia out and a lot of vitamin C just to help her get that out of the system. I don't know if you have an issue with glutathione. You can definitely check. And then he ordered actually a specific anesthesia for her. So it wasn't just the basic anesthesia cocktail. So I don't know if you have any mutation in your MTHFR or MTR. You know, he upped her methylated folate also just to help to get things out. And she was on, I think, 12 days of suppository glutathione.
I've never heard of.
That's a really good idea because I feel like for me personally, looking at my genetics, I don't think I metabolize prescription medications well. I just don't do well on them. And that was interesting because 5 days post-op, I knew it was a detox coming off of all of the anesthesia and stuff because I had migraines really bad. So that's a really good idea of ways to kind of try to avoid that and try to like detox as much as possible. Cause the anesthesiologist told me it was because like some people have a really strong reaction and it was because I don't drink any alcohol. I'm not on any medications or pain medications or anything like that. And, he had worded it as like, that's like your, I don't know, like the price you pay for being healthy, that like if you're not, like these people that come in and they're on high dose pain meds, I guess they don't have quite the reaction with anesthesia. I don't know, but that's fascinating. I'll have to ask about that glutathione.
And they're just, you know, they don't notice the additional screw up.
You know, the coffee enema could also help to pull some.
These are good ideas. Even some zeolites to pull that out.
Zeolite, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Zeolite. You can get they have homeopathic zeolite, or you can get a powdered zeolite from health and capsules. But it basically draws, you know, stuff out.
Oh, that's good. I do coffee enemas regularly. I haven't since the surgery because just getting up and down off the floor right now is a little bit of a challenge. But once I can, I will get right back on that because I do notice a difference.
Good idea. The glutathione is a good idea. Right.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
And probiotic supplement suppositories can be helpful too. It's a really quick way to restore the flora because think about it. You swallow it. It's got to get through the stomach acid, it's got to go through all the duodenum and the enzymes and the whole system and then land and implant in the digestive system. By that, a hell of a lot, we put them in direct. And that's what we're finding more and more. And I've seen people have some tremendous results when they just make their suppositories. So you get coconut oil and you mix it with your probiotic and then you freeze it. There's molds. You just go online and say suppository molds. I can even find them on Amazon. I can't remember if it's Amazon or I found them someplace else, but you can just make them and put them up. And anything you want that you want to implant in your colon or that you want to get it to your liver quickly, right? Because of the intrahepatic circulation, right? Same way that coffee enemas work because in that very lower part, they go in there and it just gets absorbed right into the circulation and goes straight to the liver. So what else would you want to deliver to the liver? So glutathione, that makes sense to do glutathione that way. To do other ways. Yeah, I wonder if you can do coffee suppositories. It could be an interesting thing. I mean, seriously, right? Because you're just making this coffee. How much do you usually do? About a quart, a cup? How much do you usually implant when you do coffee on a cup?
About 32 to 64 ounces, somewhere.
64?
Kind of in there.
Oh, mm-hmm. You do a lot. Okay, you do a big whole thing.
Well, I do like a 15-minute retention, and then I just do like just flushing it out kind of
okay,
after
so you
that.
The retention's probably about 8 ounces. I don't know how many people can retain one at. So that's a possibility as well. I don't know. I'll make a cup of coffee and I don't think you do it with the grinds because you'd want to have it be because it's already been brewed. I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking it through. That might be a good way to do it since the enemas are uncomfortable at this point.
But yeah. And I'm only on the 90 degrees hip flexion percussion for another week. So I'm thinking I could try to, I'll figure something out. Maybe in a week we can, because I think that would really help. I just feel better when I'm doing that.
Have you done any castor oil application to the hip?
No.
Lymphatics, it's healing. I just went through this protocol with my son who sprained his ankle and somebody posted Facebook where he had this horrible, you saw the picture and it made me like cringe. And I thought, oh God, you know, it's going to be 6 weeks before he's going to have any function back to it. And she posted this protocol and it was just a really simple, it's like, you and I should have thought of it ourselves, but because we're draining. Don't do ice because it's pulling the healing away from it, but it basically alternating hot and cold. So cold, hot for a minute, as hot as you can stand it for 5 minutes, I think it was. 3 minutes, some number of minutes that he has the protocol written down. And then you do a minute. Yeah, I think it was 5 minutes hot, 1 minute cold, 5 minutes hot, 1 minute cold, or three minutes hot, 1 minute cold. Anyway, you do that. And at the end, you do this castor oil massage. And he was explaining how, you know, you're getting the circulation going. You're getting a pumping going there. And then the castor oil to the area for healing. So I don't know if you're doing therapies with hot cold on the area, or physical therapy or ultrasound or anything like that. But if you do, then do that and then do a castor oil massage and just get in there and do a really nice deep massage. Stimulate the circulation and roll it up towards your heart.
Yeah, that's a really great idea. I was doing something similar with coconut oil and kind of getting a tool to kind of get in there, but the castor oil, I like it. It's so messy.
It's so messy. It doesn't, just put a little bit, and then we have towels around and been rubbing. Just go on, story short, a week and a half later, he starts putting pressure on this thing. He starts walking around on it.
Wow. 3 weeks
later, he's like, it's like, it still hurts to touch, but he's fully functional. And less fully functional, I would say, at the end of the second week.
Oh my gosh.
Have you ever seen that with a severe ankle sprain? No.
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive.
We did it every day, twice a day.
Wow.
The therapy, he went into the tub and he did the therapy back and forth. Then he came to me and I did the massage and we did it twice a day. I'm sold.
Yeah. Okay. I will try that for sure. Wow. Thank you. I always learn so much from you guys. I love these calls and it's good food for thought.
It's great. And I love the interaction because other people come up with ideas and go, oh yeah, why did I think of that one?
Well, thank you. Thanks,
you're
everybody.
Welcome. You're welcome. Who else? Anybody I want to share, like, what module you're working on right now? What modules, everybody? Who's working on module one? Anybody? Two? Put it in the chat if you don't want to speak out loud.
I'm working on three.
Three is macronutrients, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good module.
Yeah. Yes. The fat has kicked my butt.
It is kicking your butt.
The biochemistry of it.
Yeah. Well, it's just whetting your appetite for module five. Which one's micro? Five?
Micro is the next one. Number four.
Micro is next. Okay, so four. Okay, so it's just whetting your appetite for that. This was a good call for that because we were reviewing some of that. You know, the firefighters. I like to talk in terms of ways people can understand. So I like to talk about killing the firefighters and all that.
No, it was great. I really enjoyed it. And it was actually very close to my heart because I'm having a tremendous problem with my protein. I put my own blood work into the software and I am, you know, how the very low number starts at 5, minus 3. That's how protein depleted I am.
Wait, what? On the protein?
Yeah, I'm learning about the, you know, how.
Where are you? You're a 5?
I'm at 3. I'm 3.6. Yes. That's how low my protein, and I eat a lot of protein, but as you pointed out, which I also knew because I have gastritis, I have had issue with stomach acid and it still is a big issue. I didn't realize how bad it was until I actually put it in the in my blood, you know, the software. Because the below standard, the below standard starts at 5.90 and mine is at 3.00.
That's the lab standards because we go like 6.8. Anything below 6.8. Are you sure you're talking protein, not albumin or globulin?
All of it is, I mean, I'm low in the stomach acid production, but this was protein and I'm at 3. So that explains why my hair is falling out and my fingernails and I have no energy and I'm.
You need to do, first of all, bitters.
Yes, I am doing bitters.
B vitamins, you know, the magnesium and all the cofactors, but you also need to look at doing an HCL challenge.
And I have been taking HCL actually, and I've been taking 2 to 3, and then I believe I got stressed out, and then my mucosal lining got depleted again, and then that was too hard on my stomach, so I couldn't take it anymore. Now I'm rebuilding it again, and I actually saw Dr. David Wangto, and we are trying to work with the, you know, I'm blocking some of it because I was sensitive to the HCL. So we changed the brand, because some of the excipients that I was using were not good for me. So hopefully we'll get this under control, but I am, you know, my next question was, can you actually do a, water fast with somebody that has this particular protein depletion? Can you do that safely or not really? Because I'm not sure what I should go next. At this moment, I'm working on the gut.
Let's see your blood work first, because I'm very skeptical that I've never seen anybody that depleted in protein. And in that case, you need to be doing. I would be doing. Show me your labs, because I'm having a hard time with this, because I've never seen anything that well unless somebody initiated. You don't look like a person who's protein wasting that badly. You might see a cancer person, a cachexia person.
Right. That was very shocking to me. So I was not understanding what was the issue. But I am going to be preparing for the case. I guess presenting case on February 8th, and I have all of the blood work in there. In the meantime, I had added the constituents. I added the zinc, the magnesium.
I would just be doing this protein powder and free-form amino acids. There's a.
Yes, I just started the. Exactly. I just started the amino acids. I went to the branched chain amino acids. And I have to tell you, because I didn't understand why I was so neurologically just ADD and just anxiety. I usually don't have this type of it. I mean, I am a little bit on that side where I'm very hyper in my mind, but I was actually having difficulty quieting down my mind, and I was relying on alcohol at evening. Like, I would have to have a glass of wine just to stop everything, because it was just hard to just not think anymore.
Well, here's what I would do with that one, right? It's going to take a while to get your stomach acid up.
Right.
So in the meantime, you want a lot of free form. I would look at more than just branched chain, because branched chain are the ones that are going to be easily broken down to make glucose. You need the structural and the functional ones. Right? So I would be doing a full form. There's a company, and I'm not thinking of it off the top of my head, but I have it at home, and they have a really nice formula that has 21 amino acids in it in a powdered form. And I've had people do it when they're doing like a ketogenic diet to get extra protein, where they're like, I'm vegan and she wanted to do a ketogenic diet. So we used these amino acids. They work really well.
Okay.
Get them in powder form, and I'll have to make a note if you can
help
me to do that the next time, even if I'm before the call, I'll be home. Because I'm not home, I can't look it up. But just look up powdered amino acids, because I think that's a good way to go. And then I would do like some of the protein powders to make it.
Yes, I am using the protein powder, and I was using. I consume
much?
A lot of protein.
How much?
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand.
How much protein powder are you taking?
It's usually 18 grams of protein per meal per shake, and it's a vegan protein, and it doesn't have any sugar. It doesn't have anything except MCT oil.
How many do you take?
I take 2 a day, and then I will have a meal that I have protein with also.
Add 3, add a third one, and then also get the individual amino acids, because you need to get your amino acids up.
Right, exactly, and I know I need it. I took the combination for the neurotransmitters, which is GABA and thiamine and other things I can't really remember right now, but I feel already tremendous difference. But I know I need other ones as well, because, you know, my liver is not working correctly because it doesn't have the protein for the phase 2 detoxification, and my lipids are really bad, and I've never seen them this bad. So it's all out of balance.
Yeah, so, there's a couple of things you can do. You can do a general formula, 21 amino acids, has them. But the other thing that I would recommend, given those numbers, is an amino acid test.
Okay.
Genova has them, most of the major labs have them. And urine amino acids, blood amino acids, I'm not sure which would be better at this point, probably both just to see the difference. But then once you do it, through Genova, if you do the test, then they have a lab that they work with who will customize an amino acid blend for you.
Okay.
But it'll exactly be giving you what you need.
Okay, that sounds really good, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Rather than guessing and just throwing some that, you know, that you may not need and others that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would make sense. I just immediately went just to grab amino acids because I can't really work out too long. If I try to work out, I am just, my muscles hurt and I don't have the resistance to work out.
The branch chain will help with that because, but the branch chains are all going to get converted to sugar. Because if you're breaking down muscle because you don't have enough
glycogen. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, glycogen is different. So there's gluconeogenesis, or we're actually breaking down the muscle itself.
And then
where you're breaking down the glycogen.
Yeah, from the carbohydrate.
When you don't have enough protein, when you don't have enough amino acids in your system for your immune system to function, to make hormones, to make enzymes.
Right.
Break down the best storage of it, it's your muscle.
Right.
It's breaking down your muscle. So when you're working out, instead of building up your muscle, you're breaking it down for fuel. So that's where branch chains will help, because the branch chains will get converted directly to glucose.
Okay.
Which get converted as fuel, and then you don't have, yeah. So then you have those there. Break down the muscle to get that.
Okay, so if I have, you know, I have PCOS, I have to be really careful with sugar and how much I take. So would the branch chain amino acids be a risk for me also when it turns into glucose or sugar as an energy or not?
You can compare, just check your blood sugar.
Okay.
I think what it's going to do is it's going to be immediately burned, because the only way that you're usually going there, if you don't need it, it's going to be converted.
Okay.
The only way that it gets converted is if this whole process of gluconeogenesis gets stimulated to say, hey, we need sugar.
Right.
So if that process gets stimulated and you don't have those branch chains and you've added them, it's going to go to your muscle and other structural tissue to break it down.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep. Thank you. I appreciate your help.
You're welcome.
It's tremendously, I just want to tell you how exciting this is, because it's the inside information that you get. You know, I have worked with a doctor before and I've never knew how much information you can get from the blood chemistry and what you can actually learn that is, I mean, it's a life-saving, really. The information is life-saving.
Absolutely. And you know, these calls, as you guys bring up your own cases or situations, it's a great way for us to learn. Like so this was supposed to be a, what did we call it? Content and curriculum call. But everything you guys are now asking, I can take back and tie back to where in the content and curriculum is. And what better way to learn content than with cases, with real life situations, and you're going to remember it better.
Yes.
Yes. Good. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, anybody else? Questions or comments or anything you want to add? You're also allowed to disagree if you think there's some other better way. It's all open to intellectual discussion. So who's on? Let's see. We've heard from Z, from Laura, we've heard from Lynn, Eva, I see Nat, Drina, we've heard from Val, Annette, June, and Sequoia. Questions, comments about anything at all? Interesting findings, interesting things you might have found. I love when you can share. I love how Linda does that all the time, and I love it when a lot of you have been doing that. You put up articles that you find or videos that you found. All right. If no others, let me look at the chat. There's something comes up. Calcium tablets dissolved in your mouth can work for reactions. I think it's going back to Z and her histamine reactions. Lynn is confirming Rishi and Maitake. Oh, Lynn put up a whole bunch of other stuff. What'd she put? Oh, yeah. So March 16th is the phenol solicitates and histamine. So that's a long time from now. SCD gaps is February 2nd. That's next week. Comfrey for bones. Be careful with comfrey, though. You don't want to take comfrey for any length of time because it's got pyrrolizidine alkaloids that can be stressful for the liver. So comfrey is good for short-term or for a topical application. So Drina's working on adrenals. Inositol, great. So Drina's talking about PCS is so curable by raw food diet. Inositol helps too. And it's usually myo-inositol. It's a particular type of inositol, but it has great. And you know what else has been found to be spearmint tea? There's a bunch of studies on spearmint tea, believe it or not, for PCOS. Annette says one dose of homeopathic phosphorus 30X or 30C clears anesthesia. I don't know if you saw that, Laura. I have not used that. Lynn wanted to know, did you take morphine, Laura? Because that can interfere with sleep. I don't know if you did. Let's see. Started the gluten from Dr. Tom. Magnesium and melatonin helpful. Yeah, we talked about that. Let's see. And Sequoia confirming about the massage making a big difference. Magnolia bark for sleep with the phosphatidylserine. Yeah, I was going to mention that it's probably your adrenals are really geared up from all the interventions and the drugs and the cutting. So maybe that your adrenals are there. So that's a good thing to do. Okay. So Drina said she had a severe case of PCOS and cured it with a raw food diet, a low glycemic one without the fruit. That I do now. Lynette working through micronutrients, hasn't taken tests yet. Spearmint tea for hirsutism. Yep, there's been some studies on that. Comfrey and vinegar, Lynn said, for patients. Go. Ooh, what's this? Annette says Staphas. Homeopathic.
Staphasagria. My spelling's off, but it's Staphasagria. It's for any kind of violation, and surgery is definitely a violation. Even though consciously you commit, unconsciously your body still sees it as a violation.
Oh, yeah, it's an attack. I used to tell people, you know, when I had my arm surgery several years ago and I had a bone misplaced and had to be put back, my sugars were off. You're fasting. I fasted for like 18 hours and my sugar was way high. And I drank green juice. My sugars were way high for like 3 days. And it was the cortisol as a result of that what you're saying, a violation. And I think of it as, you know, the tiger's chasing us 24/7 and we're under stress. And that day the tiger got me because that's what my body perceived. It didn't perceive it was a surgeon that I'd give it permission to open me up and fix something. It was a tiger bit me and got through and it bit off a chunk of skin and, you know, it was poking around inside of me for a while. And that's very stressful. Yeah. Nothing of the drugs that are used as well. So very, very good. So Staphasagria. So have you studied homeopathy?
Pardon me?
Have you studied homeopathy? It sounds like you've been doing a lot of homeopathic study.
I did a lot of self-study and I did some, the National Homeopathy Center does study groups, official study groups, and nice. I did those for a number of years. So
fantastic.
My spelling is close, but it's wrong, but it's Staphysagria.
Staphysagria. Okay.
Good and you can find that in Whole Foods. I mean, it's pretty common.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
That's good to know. Is it good for broken bone type things? Is when you say violation?
My
son's always breaking bones.
I need to go look at my, there is one, because my best friend's son broke his arm when he was like 6, and they told him he was going to be in a cast for like 6 weeks, and he was out in 3. The doctor was stunned. I'll get the name and I'll send it because I can't think of it right now. Of course,
there was one that I took and I don't remember what it was. If it was, you know, it wasn't phosphorus.
It's Symphytum.
Symphytum. There you go. Symphytum. Yeah, I took that one.
Yeah.
It sounds like Linda looked up the Staphysagria, and it's got a lot to do with the emotional response to it. Deep anger and indignation after a hurtful act that violates one's boundaries. So you're, you know, that's interesting.
Yeah. The Staphysagria is, it's one of the first things I recommend for like a rape, because that's a definite violation also.
Definitely.
So any violation.
Child abuse. Somebody being, yeah. Cool. Good to know. Great. Yeah. All right. Anybody else? Be good? Person will either not feel able to express it or will respond very angrily. So I wonder, you know, given that, learning about that, I wonder how many of our patients and clients that we see who are really stuck in challenges due to old molestations, incest, you know, some of that stuff that really people carry with them. I wonder if something like that would be helpful for. Have you had any experience with that, Annette?
I have not personally. I'm not licensed in any way to treat anybody homeopathically. I did with a homeopath do what's called regression therapy, and she has you do a timeline of all the traumas you've had and all the major health setbacks, whatever, in your lifetime. And then she would go back and treat you homeopathically to release those older things, thus allowing you to heal in the present. So yes, it can be done.
Yeah, I bet that would be helpful. I'm thinking of a few people that I've been working with that I think it could be helpful for.
And if you're doing it at like a 30C or a 30X, which is what you can get at Whole Foods, you're not going to do any damage. Right. Not that you can with homeopathy, but you're not going to cause any great, you know, upset or anything.
Right. Great. That's good to know. Thank you. Thanks for that.
Sure.
Who else? Okay. Well,
what glucometer meter do you recommend? Just last question. What after the research that you did, what glucometer?
So I'll tell you, but I still prefer the True to Go. I've given you the link to sign in. I don't know if you've signed in, but to get access to the Sweet Spot site.
And yes, I did.
Testing on the glucose testing page. You can go in the page, and I have a chart.
Okay.
Yeah. So my second and third. Close. There were 3 of them that were decent. Some of them were just really not reliable at all. One was the Ultra, the Micro something, Ultra Micro. I can't remember the exact name of it. And then the other one was the Bayer Contour. And then the other one was the Dario, the downside of the Dario. The upside of the Dario is it plugs into your phone. It will keep all your work for you, which is really nice. The downside of it is the strips are a little more expensive than the others. So those are my, and I still don't think any of them are as good as the True to Go or the True Results, because I did tons of tests. I literally hooked my fingers for hundreds and hundreds of times per day. In fact, I think I've been on strike because I've hardly done it since. But I basically took each meter and I had 3 True to Go's, 1 True Result, and then 1 of each of the other meters. And I did 5 tests in 5 minutes, thanks to Z telling the, you know, benchmarks. We did 5 tests in 5 minutes and see which ones were going to be reliable within themselves. So whether or not they gave you a reliable assessment of what the true blood sugar was, they were at least reliable that you could count on them being good. One of them, I would test it and then test it again and test it again and again. And so 5 times in 5 minutes, and the numbers would be like 90, 140, 120, 87, 130. It was all over the map. That one, out the window. Done. I'm not recommending that at all. And there were others that had a little wider variation, that they might be 10 or 15 points different on those different variations. The true to go was always within 3 to 5, every single time, all 3 meters. When I tested all 3 meters of the true to go next to each other, they were so consistent. They were within a few points of each other. And the others weren't. Found that consistently some of the others were a little higher. And no, you know, compared to my fasting blood sugar, if I've done a blood test, it's going to be 80, 85, something like that. So the meters that are going to give me an 80 or 85 in the morning are the ones that I really trust better. And some of the others were giving me like 90, 110. And I know I don't have 110 blood sugar when I first get up in the morning. But the thing is, if you know that one of them is consistently a little higher, at least you know that you can figure your blood sugar is really something like 10 or 15 points lower than that, and you're looking for variation. I did find that at higher numbers, there was more variation. So on fasting, glucose, they were much closer.
Okay.
Anyway, so those are the ones, the charts in there. You can read all about them and make a decision for yourself.
Yes, thank you. And then just posted a link to all the glucometers.
The spreadsheet in. Oh, the One Touch Ultra Mini. Oh, my spreadsheet. Oh, good. She posted the link to the spreadsheet. Good. Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I gave up my fingers for science.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. All right, everybody. Take care. And I'm going to unmute everybody so you can all say goodbye. And we will talk again our next call. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
Who was that?